Hello, nerds. Welcome to another episode of the Brains, Boobs, and Beer podcast. I am your host, Heather, and I'm very excited to welcome the guest I have today. He's actually out in the field trying to find some Wi-Fi to connect and share his story with us today. So welcome, Jose. I hope we stay connected this whole time, but thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
I'm very excited to hear about all the things that you are doing. I know we got connected through my sister, who is a fellow PhD student. So maybe, Jose, if you can share with the audience what you are doing right now. What are you studying? What are you working on? If you can, where are you generally located?
Okay. Yeah, I'm a wildlife biologist, and I'm currently a PhD student at the School of Forestry in Northern Arizona University. But during my main work for my dissertation is about bats in my home country, Nicaragua. But during the summers, I work for other projects that relate to my supervisor's research and some other lab mates. And right now we are camping here in the White Mountains of Arizona, working with an endangered species of mice, the New Mexico jumping mouse.
Okay.
So we usually spend most of the summer here.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so you're in mountains though. You know, I think most people think Arizona and think just horrible hot desert all the time, but are you at a higher elevation?
Yes. The species of interest is likes high elevation areas, and
okay.
It's so we're here in So this species lives in high elevations above 7,000 feet usually. And so it is very different to what most people expect from mm-hmm. Arizona. It's not a desert looking area. It has a lot of mm-hmm. pine trees and conifers and has a good amount of snow every year, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
Keep
the drought away. Okay, so your normal school year time, I guess I'll say, you are generally studying bats, but right now you are in the mountains studying, you said it's a jumping mouse?
Yeah, that's the name, the New Mexico meadow jumping mouse. It's a long name.
Okay.
And it's a small mouse.
It sounds like it would be really cute. I'm going to have to find a link to put in the show, like in the episode notes, so people can see what this jumping mouse looks like, because I'm envisioning something very cute.
It is really cute, and it's truly a fascinating species. But as I say before, it's not my main research. So I feel like other people will definitely be better suited to talk about the jumping mouse, and probably that one deserves its own whole episode.
Well, okay.
Yeah, we have been learning a lot about the species. I just don't like own it.
Yeah, got it.
We can talk about bats.
So your focus is bats. So I'm sure it must be exhausting to hear how you are like the Batman. but maybe like, how did you get interested in studying bats?
Since I was like at least 6 or 7 years old, I have always wanted to be in nature. I used to say that I wanted to be an explorer, and I would mm-hmm. look at the maps and really memorize like where things are and how to get from one country to another, kind of like looking at the roads and that kind of stuff. So as soon as my mother would let me play outside, I will go and try to look for animals and bring them back home or rocks or plants. It wasn't like, my mother was very supportive and my dad too, but they weren't super happy all the time about the things I brought back home. But
but I can only imagine, like, you're finding all kinds of like bugs and critters and stuff and trying to bring them back home. I don't think my mom would appreciate that kind of thing either all the time.
Yeah, and she got a bit mad with my dad when my dad gave me found a field guide to the snakes of Nicaragua.
Oh.
And 2 weeks later I started catching snakes.
Oh no.
She's not a fan of snakes. Again, she likes science. My mother was very supportive and my dad too. But yeah, the snakes in the house were a bit like crossing the line.
And are there lots and lots of different types of snakes in Nicaragua? Like,
we have about 120 species.
Oh,
yeah, so quite a bit. And also, well, yeah, so when I finished high school I wanted to work in something related with nature, but I didn't know biologists that actually work as a biologist. Like, I knew my biology teacher from high school, but to be honest, that wasn't like that inspiring. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to be as high school teachers, and that's all where I could see they did. So, I wanted to do something more active. So my first choice was, when I graduated high school, was to go to engineering, and I did. I went to environmental quality engineering, and at the university, I met another biology professor, and this professor actually did a bit of field work. So I told him, like, look, I will volunteer, I will pay my own cost to be in the field. I just want to see what you do. And he, I think he was happy to hear about that. So the same year I started engineering, I did my first ever field work. And it was catching reptiles in the highlands of Nicaragua, a place that I have never been before. Mm. So that really like caught me. And back then I had a small point and shoot camera, and that really was like, oh, there are so many beautiful animals here and I want to get more photos. I want to see as many as I can from the book. And I know there are new species that no one had ever described. So that really like got me. And by then I was already like pretty familiar with the fauna, just looking at like books and what I had around in my house. But that experience, that field experience, was like a pretty good game changer for me. And then I started doing,
you're like, I don't know about engineering, I'm gonna go catch reptiles.
Yeah, I don't think it's like I still don't know many engineers do that. I had some friends that I dragged to on our trips later, but this one's
well, hopefully your mom appreciates that all that snake catching that you did early on helped you get into the reptile catching and in college.
Yeah, definitely. She as I say, she likes science, and she has always been very supportive, but she was also pretty like comical sometimes. Like, I will, you know, disappear for 3 days and come back like all muddy and with saying like, guess what, mom? I found this, you know, like this snake or this lizard I never seen. And she will be like, oh God, why you are not a normal kid or something. But in a friendly way, you know, like, yeah.
That's awesome. No, I love that your parents were so supportive, and I love that, I think you said it was your dad that gave you that snake book, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, to go, and then off you went exploring. So you definitely seem like you've chosen the right path.
Thanks. At some point I started doing a bit more photography with small cameras, and there was a biology symposium at my university when I was taking engineering, and I won a small award for one of the photos.
Awesome.
So the award was to go to the Central America Congress of Conservation Biology. So, and it wasn't in another country, it was in El Salvador. So I went there, and I was just like amazed of by how many biologists were working on this super really cool and diverse topics, from like tapir research with camera traps and jaguars, and to some like microbiology on the microbiomes of the digestive system of a bat. So it was like this huge spectrum of different things. And I that was like in November of 2019. And when I came back, I told my mom, I was like, I'm in the wrong like career right now. Like I'm switching to biology. And my mom just looked at me, and he for like 5 seconds, and she was like, if you're gonna change it and do things that's what you like, just do it. And just don't do this 5 times. And by then I was already like 3 years into engineering. So it was kind of like a big jump to leave that behind, 3 out of 5 years. So I was pretty close. And so I switched to biology, which was a different university. Universities are free in Nicaragua. Like most of the tuition is free. So it wasn't like economically like a burden to give up 3 years of engineering and go to the other one, but I did have to like reapply and transfer and do these things. So it took some time, but I did it. And one thing I realized is that the biology market in Nicaragua was really bad. So the university biology was a bit like forgotten, like didn't have all the support that should have. So it was really limited in the amount of like travel we could do, sponsored by university, and the laboratories were like way lower than compared to the ones in engineering. Like wasn't a priority, so it was a bit sad. But what it did open was an opportunity to spend more time outside. And the thing was, like, I went to a small workshop that was like 5 days, sponsored by Bat Conservation International. A friend just told me, oh, I saw this flyer, I thought you might like it. And I look at it, and I was like, yeah, I will apply. And I applied, and I went, and it was just a 5 day thing. But I met some people there that were working with bats in Nicaragua, and that was kind of like my whole experience with bats for the next couple of years. And later, I mean, during those couple of years, I started working as a park ranger too, while I was in the university. And one day when I was a park ranger, I saw one of the instructors from the bat workshop. And I was like, her name is Kim. And I was like, hey, oh, hello, Kim. And I would talk a bit, and I was like, I really want to work with bats, but to work with bats, you need like special equipment. It's not like the snakes where you can just go catch one. You need nets, you need
You say that like it's really easy. I can't imagine trying to catch a snake, much less a bat. But like, you're just like, oh, you just step outside and grab one. That's all.
Yeah, like snakes, a lot of them are diurnal and terrestrial, and if you want to see one, you usually don't need anything more than a flashlight and patience. But with bats, they're a lot more cryptic. It's an animal that flies at night, and we don't see that many of those. And to tell them apart, you kind of have to have them in the hand, or have to use some like acoustic detector that's highly specialized. So it is a bit more complicated to do it by your own. I asked her, and she was like, there's a team of people that are coming from this university in Arizona like next year. If you're interested, like, let me know. And I was like, can I just tell you now? Yes, I
You're like, yes, I'd
am.
like to sign up today, please. Thank you.
I was like, there's no time to lose. And I've been lucky to have opportunities like that. Like, someone just offered like right there, and I'm really bad saying no. I just say yes. Like, yeah, let's do it. So this person who came later is my current advisor, Dr. Carol Chambers, at NAU, and we started working together in 2011, and we work in several smaller projects, all related with bats, in this corner of the Pacific in Nicaragua for 7, 8 years, until I got the opportunity to come start a PhD here, and that's what I am currently.
That's awesome. I love that you have kind of like taken advantage when opportunities pop up. Like you said, you have a hard time saying no, but it's led you on kind of this path to get to what you wanted to do anyway with the biology, right? Just watching for the opportunities. It's awesome. So, Jose, but what is it about bats? Like, what drew you into bats themselves? I think people, they seem very like people either love them or hate them. They're so important, right, to the whole like environment that they're in, but like what was it that like drew you into them? And then is there a certain type of bat or species of bat that you are studying?
So one of the things I like at the beginning when I was just catching snakes, it was like they were kind of unpopular, and I feel like wasn't fair. For the animals, like, I was like, okay, these animals are actually like pretty beautiful, but they have this, like bad perception for most people, and that perception comes from many many sources. It will be, a bad experience, or sometimes it's just transmitted as a something to be fear of. Sometimes it's a bit even religious, I think. So like the connotation from different ways to see a snake and treat them all as the same. So, but when I start looking at them, one thing that really fascinates me was the diversity. So, like I say before, there were about 120 species in the country, and I was like, mm-hmm. I kind of wanted like have a collection of them, not like physically collect them, but like put them on my list, my life list of species that I have seen. And you can imagine finding 120 different ones is pretty hard, and I'm still working on that. I haven't done.
How many of those 120 have you found so far?
I'm like in 80.
Okay.
Around the 80, yeah.
That's a lot.
I need to double check some recent taxonomical splits, but yeah. But
you still have met a lot of the snakes.
Yes. So when I started learning about bats, I was like, oh, this is another of those really diverse groups. Mm-hmm. And I always like to point to people that Nicaragua is about 44% the size of the state of Arizona. So it's pretty small.
Yeah.
But we currently have over 110 species of bats.
Wow.
The whole United States have about 50, 55 species. So it is super, I mean, there's a high diversity in a really small area. It's very rich. So I was like, yeah, like, you see this diverse, and there's me trying to, oh, it's another list and I can start. And you know, it's fun again because I'm starting from zero, so I can add a lot of species in a short time right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the detail that they have in bats, like all the different faces that reflects the ecological adaptations that they have. So like a fishing bat has this they're also called like bulldog bats. They have that face that resembles like a bulldog,
like,
but
twist.
With really long feet that and claws that can pick up a fish from the water. Or wow. You have a nectar bat that has like a really long snout and resembles more like a hummingbird. So you have this huge diversity, and it's like, oh, this is like the perfect photography subjects. Like these are the perfect, so that really like catch me. And again, it's like, yeah, you can have two bats on each hand, and the life history is so much different. And there's so many things that we don't know that it was just impossible to ignore them.
Yeah. That's so interesting. First of all, I had no idea how many species of bats we had in the U.S., much less that you had so many in that like one small area. And then I had no idea that there were bats that go fishing. Like, but it makes sense. Like, if that's the food source, why wouldn't they?
Right.
But that's really interesting. So you chose bats also because they're kind of the underdog, like they're really cool, but people don't know it. So if somebody listening to this was like, oh, bats, like what would you say, like what is the biggest misconception or the thing that people fear or think they should fear bats for that's not true? Is there like one thing that stands out?
I feel like a lot of people are like think they're related to mice and rodents. So I usually start with that. Like, well, before we talk about bats, let's be clear. This is a whole separate group. And in some ways, the anatomy of a bat resembles more a person than an a rodent. Like their wings are made of their hand. They have the same amount of bones in their fingers as us. And they are just super long, and they have this membrane between the fingers that, that creates the wing. And if you know Chiroptera, that's what it means. It's like a hand wing. So I like to let people realize that the anatomy of these animals is actually similar to the one of a person or a human.
That's a cool thing. Like, that makes me think, like, oh, cool, I can, like, high-five a bat because it has five digits, too.
Also, to remind them, they're mammals. They have babies. They can carry the babies with them when they fly. And that's something that a lot of people get, like, really interested to know a bit more. Like, oh, really? Like, how they can wing with this? Like, how they hold the baby if their hands are being used to fly. So, yeah, you explain them. The baby has to grab the mother and hold there. And not all species do that, but a lot of do. And another thing I like to point is the diversity of diet that they have. In the, here in the U.S., you hear about vampire bats, and but maybe in stories and because of the movies, Dracula, and but in Nicaragua we actually have three species of vampire bats, so people have a bit more of a preconcept of what a vampire. And some people, I mean, in the way that they know someone whose cow has been bitten by vampires, so they know it's a real thing. And some people assume that all bats are vampires, but that's another thing I like to point out, like the diversity of diets. Yes, there are three species out of 100. So yeah, I like to point out about the diet. And the first things I mentioned is like there are some bats that eat fish. There are other bats that only eat or mostly eat frogs, or we think they mostly eat frogs. They probably eat other stuff too. And there are other species that eat other bats, and some plus all the ones that eat fruits and insects and pollen or nectar. So I like to point out that, and I make a comparison of like how birds during the day are, or bats during the night do the function that a lot of birds do during the day. So you have birds that are predators, like a hawk, and then you have or birds that are, you know, pollinizers and seed dispersers and help controlling some insects that are, could be a plague for the crops and that kind of stuff. So I think a lot of people quickly realize that, oh, so yeah, they are not all bad. They are not all like trying to like bit me in the neck or anything, which it's actually, I mean, no bats are actually trying to do that. But that's, I think the actual change of, you can change the perception of someone really quick if you tell them like interesting facts and, and show them a nice picture of their faces, because that's the other thing. Bats are really cute. Like, I will admit, not all in the same amount, but they are all cute.
But I think that's another good comparison, right? With people, not everybody is like the supermodel.
Yeah, no, it's totally fine.
Not all bats are a supermodel. They're like people.
Yeah, they're just like that. Yeah, no, I always talk about that. Like, and of course, this conversations with I've been in the field catching bats, and sometimes I ask for permission to go put some nets to catch them, and we're very friendly, but you can, I go to the house and it's like, hey, can I put some nets in your backyard? Because I'm talking like in the countryside, so there's like a farm, and behind your house, can I catch some bats there? And so they are usually like, oh yeah, go ahead. And sometimes it's like, yeah, go ahead, please kill them all. And it's like, okay, why? So yeah, people told me, oh yeah, I have a horse and they are messing with my horse. So that's what I usually kind of like, okay, I know I'm gonna be here the next 2 hours talking about bats.
Yeah.
But at the end, it's like, oh, you can see this person completely changed his idea about like what they say at the beginning. So that's pretty, that's very like nice. It's something that really makes you feel good about it.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, I mean, could be a slow process, but actually like in 2013 with another researchers in Nicaragua, we started the Nicaraguan Bat Conservation Program.
Okay.
So we did a lot of like talks with kids in elementary schools and high schools, and you can come back the next year and there's so many kids that have questions about the bats, and they show you their drawings and oh, I saw a bat yesterday and it was, you know, like flying in circles, and what you think it was doing, and so it just feels awesome to have that kind of impact. And my colleagues in Nicaragua have been doing that for years now, so it's been really good.
That's awesome. That's really cool. And like you said, I mean, you know, it might be one person at a time, but it's gonna make a difference to a whole lot of bats, probably.
Right. Yeah. We have been able to do like a bit of national television, and we do together with other countries and other bat conservation programs of Central America, we have a Christmas bat count, just like birders do that too. So we kind of took that idea and we do a Christmas bat count, and we invite people to come over and look at bats. And again, it's like just by telling them like science facts and like natural history things that we know, and listening to their questions, and maybe sometimes we have an answer, sometimes we just don't know.
Yeah.
But you can change so much the interest of people, and I think, I don't know, it's also, I've been also lucky to be in that position now that I can help on that.
That's great. That's really cool. And I would imagine it is very rewarding to see people's opinion change and know that you've helped some other bats avoid maybe a negative interaction by educating people on what they are, what they do, how important they are. That's great. Right. And you said photography too, right? So you are also photographing bats. Is that part of your studies, or you do that as a hobby that's kind of, like you said, earned some awards in the past? Are you merging the two together, or you just kind of do it because they both interest you?
I I love photography, so I have always, since I said when I was 12, I started doing photography. I've been trying to do more and more every time and getting a bit more complex. I like the challenge of getting a specific kind of photo. So, like the photography itself doesn't do anything for my data, for my dissertation or my research. But it does helps a lot when you present your results. So that's another thing I have found, that I find myself using a lot of the photos and presentations, and that really help me like catch a bit of the audience. And one again, there's a lot of species that are very like rare or poorly known, so I get a lot of requests from field guides and websites that are doing articles or books, and they want to include some of the photos. So I will say I never leave home without a camera. That's the only way I get the photos, because you never know when you catch, the most rare species or anything. Out of the 111 species that are currently in Nicaragua, talking about bats, I have photographed 97. So
Oh my gosh.
I'm kind of
You're
close
so
there,
close.
but
Yeah.
that's something I really wanna like get to see them all. And I think when I come back in the next couple of years, I will have a better idea where to go find them.
So for the bats in general, what is their biggest like life challenge? Is it are there a lot of endangered species? Is it due to, I don't know, deforestation? Is it due to pollution? Is it due to people who don't understand them, like wanting to remove them from their environment? Like, what is the biggest challenge that bats face?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that actually relates a lot with my dissertation projects. You can imagine there's so many species that are doing so many different things, that some are more impacted by one or other. So one of the main ones is habitat destruction, and that habitat destruction most of the time is not like directed to them. It's related with urbanization and related to land use conversion. So like, you have forests, and then but you have more cows, and you want to make more pastures. So that habitat fragmentation and that kind of thing. For bats that like to live in big colonies and caves, their main threat is the bad perception from the communities around it. So, as I say, there's a lot of people that think that all bats are vampires, and they think that by, destroying a cave or eliminating the population there, or just like chasing them away, they're gonna improve that situation. And it's often not, and this is sad, but often that's not the case. Usually those big colonies are beneficial species and totally harmless, almost like. So yeah, it varies. For a good amount of species, one of their main threats is the the diminishing of mature forests. So they, some of these species need like really big trees to roost, or they prefer to fly like under the canopy of big trees. Like they have this, we call it flyways. So bats can fly at different altitude from the ground. So some of these species is like, okay, they fly high from the ground, but still under canopy. And if you don't have these big trees, they just cannot function well. And some species are actually find a benefit from human disturbances. So a lot of species eat piper, that is a plant in the family, just like black pepper. And it's very common in regrowth when you cut the forest and the plants come back. So they love those kind of disturbances, and they are actually increasing their numbers. A bit ironically, vampire bats benefit from presence of human activity, but it's related with the amount of cattle that you have. So in very pristine areas, vampire bats are really low abundance. Like they're rare, but when you introduce cattle, you are basically saying like, look at all this. Yeah, look at all this food available. So they really shoot their numbers up, and that's also detrimental to other species, because vampire bats are they kind of like can push other species from their roosting areas. They can take over in a cave. They can start increasing their numbers, and then the other species is like more and more tight with space, and they vampire bats are, they're not the biggest species, they're also not the smallest, they're kind of like a medium heavy weighted, so they can push a lot of other smaller species away easily.
That's interesting though, that like, I guess unfortunately some of them are rising in numbers, like you said, with the vampire bats pushing out the other ones, even though humans are generally destructive.
Right.
That's interesting. And you mentioned the vampire bat is kind of a, I don't know, medium-sized bat. Do you know, like, the smallest bat? Like, how can you describe, like, the smallest bat you've seen versus the largest bat you've seen? I feel like those are other things that if people are on the internets, they might be like, oh my God. I think it'd be interesting to hear, like, what's the smallest one you've seen? Like, is it the size of, I don't know, your palm, or like, and then how big have you seen bats get?
So the smallest bat we have, and I have seen in Nicaragua, is a little yellow bat. I think that's the actual name. It is little and it's yellow, so it's an appropriate name. With his wings folded, is no bigger than your thumb.
Oh my gosh!
And it weighs between 3 and 5 grams.
Oh.
With their wing extended, it might be maybe 6 inches wingspan. So
oh my
God. It's a pretty small bat. They eat insects.
Yeah. Okay.
The largest bat we have in the continent of America and in Nicaragua, and I also been lucky to work with that, is the spectral bat, and sounds intimidating, and this thing is actually huge. It's this animal, the weight can be over 200 grams. So compared to the 3 gram little yellow bat, thing is, can easily be over 60 times heavier.
Wow.
And the wingspan is about 3 feet.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And these ones are the ones that can eat other bats. Mm. And right now, one of my dissertation chapters is about one of these species.
Mm-hmm.
We know they are monogamous. They have a pregnancy period of 9 months, like humans.
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. And they take, the parents take care of usually single cub for up to a year.
Wow.
And again, we don't know much about these animals. This what we know is from really a very few individuals. So there's so much more to know. But we know they can eat birds. They eat mice.
Hmm.
As I say, they can eat other bats. So there are like full carnivorous species. This is, we always call them like, these are the jaguars of the bat world. It's an apex predator.
Yeah. Wow, that's cool. I have to, like, I'm so intrigued. I have to go look up. I'm gonna have to get a bat book, like how your dad gave you a snake book. I'm gonna have to get a bat book to look it all up, and try to picture like these two, this little thumb size versus this 3 foot wingspan bat side by side.
Right. Yeah. It is impressive the amount of variation that you can find in these animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I love the comparisons you drew, like between birds, and then even with people, right? And like the different meal plans that the the bats are on. Some are vegan.
I like that, the meal plan.
More pescatarian, like it just depends, right?
Yeah.
I love it. It's so fascinating, and I'm so impressed that you've already gotten photos of most of them, especially considering it's not like you're photographing like a sloth, like these bats are on the move and you're still managing to capture them on film. So that's pretty impressive.
It's really fun. And I'd say it's pretty challenging. I want to do more photos of them flying because it really shows better the anatomy, their wings can be very different. I also made comparisons with bats and airplanes. Some have like a more like a fighter jet shape of a wing. Mm-hmm. So they are made for speed, but they are not very maneuverable. Some other ones are more like a cargo plane with a really wide wing, and they fly slow, but they can really like just fly through the clutter in the jungle. So it's just by looking at the wind, you can already like have a pretty good guess of what behavior can you expect from them.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And you mentioned how they can fly with the babies. And did you say the babies are called cubs?
Yeah, we call them cubs, I think. I honestly, my English, I call a lot of things the same way because but
listen, I mean, it sounds like you're
pops,
sounds great to me. Pops. Like, I believe you.
Yeah.
I was thinking like
can you just call them babies?
Yeah, babies.
Little babies.
And I feel like all little baby animals are cute. Maybe that's the way to sell people on bats. Little babies.
Yeah. I think that's an excellent strategy.
That's awesome. Oh my goodness. Wow. So many things to learn about bats and that they're good and they might eat, who knows, mosquitoes. Do they eat cicadas? Like, I'm in New Jersey, so we have cicadas everywhere, like making noise and dying and leaving their shells around, which I think birds eat them, but do bats eat cicadas? Because that'd be nice.
Maybe for the species of bats that you have in where you live, there are probably cicadas that might be a bit too big,
Oh,
but
oh no.
I'm sure in the tropics, bigger species will love to have a cicada for
I'd
dinner.
love to send them there. I'd love to send them a care package of cicadas. They're so bad. My sister is inundated with questions on cicadas right now. Once my coworkers learn that she's doing things with bugs and trees, anytime there's a question, I have to ask her. Oh gosh. Well, that's awesome, Jose. I love what you're doing. It sounds so much fun. And like you said, you're in the field now, like doing field work, getting to be outdoors and trying to help save the planet a little bit, like each little bat or mouse or whatever at a time. So do you get any free time to do like do you have any other hobbies besides photography that you do?
Well, the thing is, photographer, there's so many things to photograph that some of them
Yeah.
are more hobby than the other one. But I have recently enjoyed learning a bit more about astronomy.
Oh, okay.
So again, I'm using my camera and I'm trying to do
Yeah.
more like astrophotography, still photography. I don't know, but you can imagine it's pretty different than the photographing a mouse or a snake.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, the stars probably hold still a little better for you.
they still move slowly,
They
but
do, but much slower.
and I like to be up at night, so that one goes well. I do a lot of homework while I'm waiting for my photos, and I find it very peaceful and give me times to think about what I'm doing the next week or the next few days or where I'm going with my work. So yeah, I've been enjoying that. I also started doing more birding. I have been trying to ignore birds for the most of my life because, as I say, I like kind of like the less popular animals, but birds get a lot of love from people. So I have kind of like ignored them for a bit, but recently a friend invited me to do a like a low key big year, so to see, to count as many bird species as you can during an entire year. So that really has me like looking at everything that flies during the day now.
Oh, that's cool. That's fun. I didn't realize there's like annual competitions for how many like birds or bats or bugs or whatever you can see.
I mean, again, I'm not a professional competitor in birding, but it's been like fun to just keep track of how many different animals you see, and it's another excuse to like get up a bit earlier and go, walk a bit in the forest and see what you can find.
I'm gonna try that as my excuse the next time I want to leave work early. I have to go to nature and I need to count birds. See what my manager says.
I
I
wish
feel
you the
like he
best
might be
luck
okay
for
with
that.
it. He might be okay with it. Who knows? That's awesome. But I think it's interesting too, because I think it kind of ties into something that seems to be popping up a lot now, especially with like coming back out of the pandemic and like people trying to get outdoors and enjoy nature a little bit more. Like, you know, I think there is something to that. Getting out in nature is like healthy for us.
Yes.
You know, as long as we're not trashing it, like pick up your trash, people. But
yeah, no, you have to enjoy it responsibly.
yeah. But there is something to it about, like, what is it in Japanese? It's, I don't know the term, but it's something about like forest bathing, like being in nature mm-hmm. is cleansing, kind of. Oh,
interesting. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. So you're out there enjoying it all the time. I'm a little bit jealous now. maybe I really do need to set up, I'm going to be birding at this time.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize that nature is, it's a lot closer than, like, you don't have to go all the way to Africa to enjoy nature.
No, yeah, it's outside.
and I love to, like, focus on a small group and look for things. Like, sometimes I walk outside and I'm like, okay, today I'm just going to look for insects. And again, I'm not an insect person. I'm not like crazy. but I do like to see bugs. So sometimes I just put like a macro lens on my camera and I'm like, just maybe spend an hour just walking like 20 steps, just looking for a little, you know, different types of ants, or I have no idea what they're called, but
yeah,
it's just fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and anymore, like, you can look stuff up so easily. Like, you know, you don't have to wait for Jose's dad to give you a book. You can, still do it on your own and like look it up on your phone. I was just signing up for an app that does that. iNaturalist, I think it's
yes.
called. Yeah. All right. Do you use that?
I do use iNaturalist, and I think it's a great tool. I honestly use it all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, every time I go to a place, it's like especially if a new place, before looking on Google Maps, I go to iNaturalist and see what people have seen there before.
Oh, okay.
And you can tell, you know, what time of the year and everything.
It sounded really interesting. So when I heard about it, it was like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's, you can post things, and then because there's so many people on it, there are, you know, biologists like yourself. So like, if I saw a bat, I was like, look what I saw. What is this? You could be like, oh, Heather, that's a blah, blah, blah bat. That's a little yellow bat or whatever it is. So it sounds like there's a lot of feedback on there too. So people can continue to learn what's in there. In their own nature.
Yeah, it is an incredible community. There's a ton of people super knowledgeable. Some people are just like, you know, people that like nature, but they're also like authorities and different groups that curate the sightings and are interested to see how many records you have of some like hard to survey animals. Like, I know there's a lot of people using it for rare mammals, because it's like suddenly you have 2 million surveyors, and the chances that someone is gonna see a wolverine, someone on that 2 million people that live in certain area, it's way higher than just you doing a transect one day. Yeah. So it is really useful, and more people I know are working with data collected by citizen science or community science.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And that's fun. That's fun for like those of us that aren't necessarily studying, but to be a part of like, I mean, barely, but like to be a part of your project, like, look, I saw one, like that's fun.
Yeah. And again, it's like some researcher might be interested in those cicadas that you have been looking at recently. Pictures. I don't know. They might be like, oh, you find some there. So maybe that's a good place to go look next time. Yeah. I don't know in how many years. I don't know. They have like a long cycle.
Yeah, I think they said it was like 17 years.
17,
yeah. So I was like, sounds well, right. Lucky us. Because there's a bunch of trees outside of the building I'm in on campus at work, and they were so loud it hurt my ears. And my job, like sometimes I'm on a production floor with big machines, and it was like these cicadas are at least as loud as these machines. So I was trying to measure the decibel level.
Oh, wow.
To try to compare, like, how, like these are so loud. What do they compare to? And it was insane. I was like, wow, they are really loud.
Yeah, that's. Oh, man. I know they can be incredibly loud. I know there's a lot of species too, so I don't know how they compare to each other. But yeah,
well,
I find it pretty fascinating. And look at. If they come out like that every 17 years, it's a pretty unique event.
Yeah.
It's like a solar eclipse or, I don't know.
Yeah.
The planets aligning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Too bad they sound like it's like a doomsday. Like, their noise. I mean, you know, whatever, it's their time.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, Jose, in your experiences so far, if there's a listener to this episode who like is now completely converted and like wants to become a biologist, do you have any tips for them to get started, or any like life lessons you've learned thus far that you could share with them or try to encourage them?
Sure, I think. In at least in my experience in my life, what really have helped me is that I try to approach people that are doing something that I'm interested on. And I think this might sound like obvious, but I also have found like a lot of people are a bit afraid to go and ask someone about like, hey, I see that you are catching something in the river, but like, what is it? Like, mm-hmm. Why? For what? And I feel like a lot of researchers really appreciate when someone comes by and wants to know more about what you're doing. And so don't be afraid of go ask. And if you something that you're really interested, those are going to be the people that can point you on how to get involved. Mm-hmm. Also, again, like if maybe your interest is not work as a biologist or an ecologist, but you just enjoy it, there are great communities like the one you mentioned, the iNaturalist, and there are other platforms where, like birders have eBird, and there are other ones that will maybe fit better with whatever is your interest, and you can do your small contribution to the science and the developing of knowledge of our nature. So don't subestimate everything you can bring to the knowledge of this species.
That's awesome. Yeah, and that's I love both your points. I feel like as we get older, we kind of lose that curiosity or inquisitiveness. Like little kids are always like, why? What are you doing? What is that? Like kids just don't care. They just ask the questions, right? Because they're learning. And I feel like as adults, we kind of don't do that anymore. So I like your advice of like, hey, if you don't know, ask. And I think it's helpful for people who have not maybe gone through, you know, like a doctor program or done like field work and research, like to understand that you guys are approachable and you appreciate questions about your work. I mean, you're doing it for a reason.
Yes.
And that, you know, you don't have to be, like you said, a biologist or ecologist or add in your ologist to be involved. And there's apps and there's so many ways you can get involved now and help and contribute.
Yeah, that's totally right.
Awesome. See, like, there you go. Pep talk from Jose, everybody. Go sign up in something. Find some critter that fascinates you and see what you can do.
Yeah, that's in my experience.
Yeah.
It worked well for me. It's been working well for me.
Exactly. You were a case in point. Like, you asked questions and look, now you get to do it. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. Well, Jose, the only other question I have for you is, are you a beer drinker? Since this is Brains, Boobs, and Beer, do you partake of beer when you're not studying?
I do.
And do you have
I am a beer person, yeah.
Yeah.
And one, I don't know if I'm interested to hear this, but in Nicaragua, we only have like two major beers, and that's kind of like 95% of what people drink, one of the other.
Uh-huh.
So coming to do a PhD in the US and Arizona, it's been like going to, you know,
it's like you have a whole someone, other list to try to catch like all the beers.
Yeah, it's for so, it's like someone that is, I don't know, lives in a tundra, go to the rainforest of Brazil.
Yeah, yeah.
The diversity is amazing. And I have found my love in IPAs.
Okay.
Yeah. So I never tried an IPA before.
Okay.
And when I came here, now it's like, I just want to try them all. And IPA is my way to go. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was not originally a big fan of IPAs, but they're growing on me. Right now, I actually, not in my hand, but in my fridge, I have, it's a hazy one from, it's a brewery called Dogfish Head.
Oh, I know that.
yeah. And I really like this one. And when it's like really nice and cold, it's good. It's refreshing. Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, I might get one in camp later today.
Perfect. I was gonna ask, like, can you have your beers in, you know, in camp in the field work? But it seems appropriate. Like, you gotta relax after your, you know, all your mouse.
We live in the forest. In the forest, so we have our work, and then we go back home, which is our tent and our camp. So once we're back from work, it's just like being at home, and you become. Open your beer and enjoy the afternoon. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, that's good. I'm glad.
It's another great thing about wildlife biology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get to live in nature, but still have some of the benefit of the city with the beers.
Yeah, cold beer.
Yeah. Nice. Well, Jose, I will let you get back to the field work, but thank you so much for sharing everything that you shared today. I mean, I already kind of liked bats, and I'm kind of with you on those, like, those critters that don't get all the love. Like, I don't know how familiar you are with Shark Week, but I'm obsessed with sharks. So I kind of feel you on the, like, hey, these are cool animals. They just are misunderstood thanks to like Hollywood and the internet and ignorance.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I would imagine that there's some new converts after hearing all about the bats today that There will be some more bat fans out there.
Yeah, bats need more friends. And
yes, bats need friends too.
Yeah.
Hey, nerds! I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. What another amazing person with great ideas and insights. If you want to keep in touch, check us out on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook via the handle Brains Boobs Beer. I've also started a Discord server, so if that is your preferred method of communication, look for that also as Brains Boobs Beer server. And then periodically, I do post blogs on the website. You can also link to episodes and send us a note there if you want to connect with anyone, or perhaps if you want to be on an episode. And that website is www.brainsboobsbeer.com. Cheers.